Okay. So here is something really cool I just learned yesterday. Do any of you have an Amazon Echo? Do any of you talk to Alexa? You can now ask Alexa to read the daily word to you. You can ask Alexa to submit a prayer request to Silent Unity for you. We are the first spiritual organization of any kind on Alexa, because Unity is moving into the 21st century. So I just wanted you to know that because I thought it was really cool. I don't know if Siri can do it, if you have the right apps. I don't think so. Not yet. So this is my theory for today. Life should be like a potluck. Everybody brings something. We all get to eat. We get to eat things we wouldn't otherwise because somebody is an expert at grilling meat. And somebody else makes delicious pies. And we can try new things and partake of goodness because others are willing to share what they have and what they know. I suppose that's socialized food. But it seems to work. And a lot of you will be doing that this week. Even if it's not called a potluck, Thanksgiving dinner is often spread over several people who cook or bring something. I know a few people who resent having to contribute food to a meal. They just don't go, and I understand. It can be a lot of trouble to make a special trip to HEB and then go home and cook something. And it can seem thankless to put in a lot of effort when you don't know if it'll be appreciated, or someone's on a weird diet and won't eat it, or someone else brings the same thing but better. It's tempting to say, let them get their own food. So this might not be a governing philosophy of the universe, okay? I'm still working on it. But I think the way you approach a potluck might be the way you approach life. I mean, which of these attitudes works better in a family? Everyone contributes something or everyone fends for himself? Which works better in a society? It occurred to me, as much as we are thankful at Thanksgiving, we sometimes skip giving. Giving is part of the name of the holiday. And yes, we're giving thanks, but what else are we giving? What do you bring to the table? And I know some of you are already tired just thinking about producing a Thanksgiving dinner. And don't take that too literally. I'm not suggesting you work to the point of exhaustion. I'm talking about overall, over a lifetime, how do you give of yourself? I talked a couple of weeks ago about your soul's purpose. And you know, I believe we come into human form to learn and grow, but also to give. And the more I read about that, the more emphasis I see on giving, on the service we came to provide. Some people came as teachers or healers, but apparently a great many people just come to give light, to contribute to the joy of the earth, to make things better by their presence. What if that's your only reason for being here? Just to be the light. Does that take the pressure off? Or does it make you wonder, well, now what do I do? How do I be the light? We could use more light right now. Maybe this is one of the times you came for. I saw a cartoon in the New York Times this week that you might have seen. People are sitting in a circle of folding chairs, and one man is standing and says, "My name is Bob, and it's been 2 hours since I accepted the results of the election." I keep thinking the uproar on both sides will settle down, but apparently not yet. So what if people at your Thanksgiving table start talking politics? Even if they all agree that they think everything is terrible, but especially if there's conflict or disagreement, how can you be the light? What will you contribute at that table? How can you be the light at work, at your children's school, with your family at home, walking through Home Depot? What can you contribute? And if we're going to talk about being the light, let me try to define it. It is living from divine consciousness. It's being the best you can be. It's not trying to be nice. It's allowing divine love to flow through you. We practice this all our lives. It's another reason we're here. Mary Morrissey calls it being a person of increase. You add something wherever you go. My mother was good at this. She not only gave little gifts to everyone, she had a gift closet at home. Because she would find things, because she shopped, and she'd find things and she just knew they would be perfect for someone sometime. So she had a gift closet. She also gave compliments very deliberately. She would find something to praise. Now, this was not her philosophy of child rearing. She started doing this later as part of her recovery after I was grown and gone. She wasn't recovering, never mind. So one day I was visiting her, we were checking out at a restaurant, and it was some really ordinary place like IHOP. And the cashier was probably 23, you know, just going through the motions of ringing up another customer. And my mother said to her, "Your hair is so shiny standing under that light." And I thought, okay, that one's a stretch. But this girl lit up as if it were the first compliment she'd ever been given. And maybe it was, at least for that day. I think most of all, she felt seen. Do you see the people you interact with? The waiters in restaurants, the cashiers and checkers at the grocery store, the guys who wipe down your car at the car wash? Or are you on your phone? For that matter, do you really see the people you love or live with? Do you notice what they do well? Or tell them what you appreciate? Do you acknowledge how they grow and change? It's easy to take a snapshot of a person and decide what they're like and keep that image forever, rather than noticing their growth. Are you paying attention and commenting on whatever is praiseworthy? I've heard parenting experts say you should catch your children doing something right and comment on it. This is not a new idea, though, looking for the good. The Apostle Paul suggested it to the Philippians in a letter 2,000 years ago. He said, "Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things." My friend Dottie Gandy worked a long time for Stephen Covey. She ran his Dallas office. And for a while, her adult daughter worked there too, and so Dottie was her own daughter's boss. And it came time for evaluations. And Dottie didn't know what to say. She thought Kelly was pretty much perfect. Kelly came in and sat down for her evaluation, and Dottie says, what popped out of her mouth was, "Would it be all right with you if for the next 30 days, I tell you one thing that I admire or appreciate about you?" Kelly said, "Sure, Mom." The first 10 days were easy. There's a lot to appreciate about Kelly. But Dottie says after that, after 10 days or 2 weeks, she had to really pay attention. What could she notice that might not be obvious? What could she see in Kelly's growth, especially since she'd known Kelly all her life? In the end, Dolly made a little laminated business card with the 30 qualities she admired about Kelly. But what she didn't expect was that Kelly's job performance skyrocketed during that 30 days. So Dottie started trying it with other employees. Then she recruited friends to try it in their workplaces, which is how I got involved. We did it at Unity of Dallas. Sometimes a boss would do it for an employee, sometimes staff did it for each other, then friends started doing it for each other. Dottie ended up writing a book called 30 Days to a Happy Employee about this process. And when I read it, I asked her, do business leaders really need to be told that compliments are more motivating than criticism?
Yes.
That's what she said. Sadly, yes. And she also said, the 30-day process was not just about praise. It was about really seeing the other person and valuing their innate worthiness. Dottie has always been a person of increase. You just feel better about yourself after you've been with her. Groups are happier if she's in them. One thing we noticed in trying out this 30-day plan was that it was much easier to find something to admire in someone else on the days we felt good about ourselves. On days when we were beating ourselves up for something, we had to rack our brains to see an admirable quality in the other person. Isn't that interesting? So what are you giving to yourself? Are you cutting yourself some slack? Are you finding praiseworthy traits in yourself? You don't have to say them out loud. But what if you found one thing to appreciate about yourself every day for 30 days? What if you wrote down every time you thought you'd done a good job shining your light, or even remembered to try? And what if you told one other person about your good qualities? Someone you could call once a day just to make it real. Being the light is about more than giving compliments. It's the consciousness you're holding. And if I could make a suggestion for one thought to focus on during the holidays, it's oneness. Everyone you see is just a part of the same whole. They are just another expression of God. So look for their good. Mother Teresa said, every person is Jesus in all his distressing disguises. Each of us carries the potential that Jesus demonstrated. Each of us is just as connected to God because we're part of the whole. And that includes people who voted in a different way or didn't vote. It includes people who march in the streets. It includes people who blow things up. They are not always acting from their God self, but you know who they truly are and that you are as connected to them as your arm is to your body. Hold the thought of oneness, then act from that. If I truly see this person as a part of me, then what do I do? What do I say? Part of being the light has to mean staying present, even when it's uncomfortable, even when there's conflict. If your Thanksgiving does turn into a political argument, or not even political, I mean, you know how families are. You took Aunt Millie's opal ring and it should have come to me. Whatever the reason is on the surface, to be the light means staying present with it. Not hiding, not avoiding, not saying, oh, look, it's time for the game to start. Maybe not even changing the subject, not shutting it down. Instead, remember you are one with these other people. How can you serve them? How can you love them? What are they really asking for? Because everything is either an expression of love or a cry for love. Now, you're not responsible for their feelings, but you are responsible for the consciousness you hold and the actions that stem from it. Let your words and actions come from the light, the divine in you. I'm hoping that the Thanksgiving holiday and a day of gratitude in our country will shift our collective focus from what's wrong to the abundance that is. The pilgrims, as the story goes, celebrated the harvest, their abundance, and their connection to the Native Americans, even though they were different. They weren't focused on differences, and they didn't dwell on the coming winter when half of them might die. I'm acquainted with an American woman who has lived in Paris for a long time, and she was visiting back in America, sitting at a table where someone offered a toast, and the people clinked their glasses, and then they stood up and reached across the table, and they were tying themselves in knots, trying to clink glasses with every other person. And she said, you Americans, she's American. She said, you think it's about clinking glasses. It's about looking into each other's eyes and appreciating your connection. It's a moment of oneness. Whatever a toast is about, it draws our attention to something we can appreciate together. And that's why we have Thanksgiving. We appreciate each other and what is, and it fills us up to go forth and give more, to be the light. This has always been our spiritual work. Francis of Assisi said it 800 years ago, but he could have been talking about our world today, how to contribute light and joy where the focus has been on conflict and very fearful predictions are being made about the future. His famous prayer is about what we want to be in those circumstances, but it's also about what we have to let go. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Dying to the old ways, dying to what no longer serves us, letting go of everything that does not support our purpose to be the light on the planet. So this Thanksgiving, there are more questions than simply asking what you're grateful for. Ask, what are you here to be? Ask, what can you give in each situation? How can you be a person of increase? How can you be the divine light that others might so desperately need to see and be warmed by? Go into this holiday with an open heart. Go with the intention of sowing love, and know you have the power of God at your back. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Melinda.
Moment to get in your chair and just feel that oneness. Plant your feet on the floor and feel that oneness with Mother Earth. Sit up straight, and as you breathe, feel as if you are inhaling through the soles of your feet and exhaling up through the top of your head. That is who we are. We are that connection between the human and the divine, between the earth and the heavens. We are channels. And now, breathe again. And as you breathe in, think about a tiny flame that burns right in your heart center. And every breath fans that flame. Every inhale and every exhale. So that it grows larger and larger and fills your chest, fills your abdomen, fills your whole center with warmth. And feel that warmth then radiating up into your shoulders. And as you breathe, the fan is flamed even larger. Now it's all the way down your arms, into your wrists, your hands, your fingers, and downward into your legs. The warmth spreads so that you feel that warm connection to what's underneath you. And that warmth also lights up your face, your smile, between your ears, your mind, your brain, and the top of your head, so that you are warmth and light. That's who you are, warmth and light, the warmth and the light and the love of God. And in every moment that we are aware that we are the light, it's so easy to see the light in others. So now, if you will, just visualize this warm body, this glowing body that you have as you fan this flame of love. And see how far that flame, see how far the glow of that flame and the warmth of that flame reaches out from you. It is impossible for the glow and the warmth of your flame to not intermingle with the glow and the warmth from the flames of your neighbor. And this is how we're all connected. We are all part of one physical body called the universe, but we are also all part of one spiritual body, which is this light, this love, this warmth. So I ask you to bring into your mind anyone, maybe your family that you're going to see later this week, for whom it has been difficult for you to feel that warmth and that love and that light and that connection. Bring that person or that group of people and plant them right in the center of your heart where that flame is. And you won't be able to see any darkness as they are immersed in the flame of your heart. This is the gift that you can give to every person you meet, which is just to acknowledge the truth of this. This is not something that we're doing or creating. This is the truth of who we are. But we forget. And we have the ability now to remember. And in every moment that we remember, we are greatly empowered to give that gift away and to help others remember. And I think that's why we come together in community, why we're in this church. I'm here so that you can remind me of who I really am. And you're here so that you can be reminded of who you really are. So breathe into the warmth of that flame for just a moment in the silence.
Sorrow and despair. gladly bear.